Hi, this is Karen Anderson, the host of Life Now. Welcome to Life Now, the radio show devoted to living well in this life, rather than paying attention to the next. Our hope is to probe and extract where boldness rears its promising head, and to uplift those moments where justice, compassion, and kindness lead themselves in people's living and loving. A challenging feat, we know, but certainly one worth exploring. Courage. It's a mysterious virtue, in my opinion. All week I've been trying to figure out where it comes from when it appears in our lives. Does it arise from some wellspring of bravery we can tap into when needed? Or can we push some on button like we do, say, with kindness? You see an opportunity, you turn on kindness like a spigot, and it's there, accessible, available. I don't know, neither seem right. When I listen to stories on courage or think of my own courageous acts, the root of courage seems more elusive, more carnal, more visceral, sometimes pretty darn personal. This week I've learned that the courage that most intrigues me comes forth in that hairline crack of time when a person decides not to betray their core values and takes a risk to speak out or act. Or the courage that arrives because love is so vibrant and clear that to be true to love, courage becomes the derivative virtue in its wake. I could list 10 more reasons at least, but we at Life Now were captivated by this month by what does it mean to be a person of courage? So we asked our reporters to think where had courage been operative in their life and where had it fallen short, not shown up, even vanished. And their answers to that simple question are, well, so human, so strangely interconnected that it makes you feel more allied with our fellow bipeds than you might expect. And, well, more hopeful about the human race as well. So this is Claudia Cashman, longtime Life Now reporter whose weaving of story and memory are always a fresh approach to the topic.
It was a dark and stormy night. Nah, no it wasn't. It was summer in Vermont, June to be exact, a heck of a hot day full of butterflies and bees and blue sky and wildflowers and four college friends hiking up to Silver Lake for a swim. There was me and Bill and Tom and Beth. Bill and Tom were roommates and so were Beth and I. She had a habit of doing that, ending up dating the roommate of whoever I was dating. But that's another story for another time. We'd been hiking for about an hour, and my very sweat-soaked shirt was beginning to bother me. I gave it some thought and decided it was okay to take it off, to do the rest of the trek in my cut-off jeans and the color-coordinated lavender bra I was wearing underneath. Hey, I was 20. I could get away with it. Bill sure liked the idea. "It looked like a French model," he murmured. Tom didn't quite agree. He tisk-tisked me as I tied the shirt around my waist, turning his head in complete disapproval. You see, Tom had once referred to me as a floozy. Again, another story, another time. Beth just giggled. That's what Beth did, in that girly girl kind of way. "Please like me," was what it said. I still dislike that giggle to this day. It's a laugh laughed by a girl who has no opinion, in my opinion. But the rest of the hike was certainly cooler without a shirt sticking to my skin. For a while, anyway. Soon we were as cool and slick as happy seal pups splashing and leaping through the refreshing waters of Silver Lake. But all too quickly, Tom announced that it was time to get back to his parents' house. Thus began the trip back down the mountain. We had walked for about 20 minutes when Tom and Bill spotted it. The water drainage pipe. Hovering at the highest point where we stood at about 20 feet off the ground. A connector pipe to the ground visible about 30 feet in front of us. I didn't have to ask to know what was coming. The boys decided to walk down the pipe like mountain goats. To just get right on where we stood and do a daring descent with just the balance of their arms and the braveness of their souls. They looked at me. They looked at Beth. The question hung in the air. Would we or wouldn't we? Beth was the first to speak. No way am I doing that. Absolutely not. Are you crazy? I'll walk down the way we came up. I don't even care if I get lost. I'll see you down there somewhere. I heard myself gulp. Did you know it's an actual sound when you do it for real? Not just a sound effect written for emphasis in a script or a story? Gulp. I did not want to be a weenie like Beth. I wanted to be brave like the boys. Images of my childhood floated through my head of running around shirtless with my brothers, climbing trees, waging wars. I would not take the prissy way out with Beth. So I bravely said, no, I'll take the pipe too. And so I did. I watched Bill and Tom blithely take their first steps, eyes focused forward, balancing, almost running, as I took those first slow, short, tentative steps on my own. About 10 steps out, I knew I couldn't do it. My heart was pounding. Tears started, and I did the only thing I could think of doing. I sat down on a drainage pipe, 20 feet in the air, and I cried. I wrapped my arms around that pipe and held on tightly with no idea what would happen next. Bill and Tom had, of course, already reached the end of the pipe before they realized what I was doing. And before I knew it, Tom had run all the way back up the hill to the beginning of the pipe, and Bill had climbed back up the connector pipe and was inching his way in a seated position back up the pipe to reach me. Tom sat down behind me, Bill was in front of me, and together they talked me back up that pipe to where I had started. Inch by inch, butt by butt, we crawled backward until we reached terra firma once again. Everybody was really nice about it, very understanding, and nobody started laughing about it for at least a year. Over the years, I've winced more than once, thinking that I had shown a definite lack of courage in that situation. But I'd have to say now that I can see it differently, that sometimes having the courage to turn back once you've begun a journey, the courage to realize that you have embarked on a mistake, is sometimes the most courage a person can ever have. 10 steps forward, many more back.
Emily Weber is a new reporter to us, and her story is a do or die about courage.
The summer after I graduated from college, I decided to leave behind my life in the Midwest and move to California. I had been accepted into the Backcountry Trails program through the California Conservation Corps, and for 5 months I lived and worked in a national forest. My 4 years at a liberal arts college in the Midwest hadn't taught me the value of hard work and backbreaking labor, and that's what I found in the backcountry. I joined my crew in May and quickly got used to doing 350 sit-ups daily and carrying buckets of water up steep hills for cooking, cleaning, and bathing. For an entire summer, I slept in a tent, bathed in lakes or rivers, and carried all my possessions on my back. And I was blissfully happy about the whole thing. In the beginning, I had to overcome quite a lot, including my fear of bears, the dark, getting lost on a trail, and most of all, looking weak or stupid in front of my crew. There's no room for quitters or idiots on the trails. You can't trust the former, and you can't count on the latter. There are many situations out in the wilderness when, dealing with weakness or stupidity, you could end up hurt, lost, or dead. That meant that whatever difficulties came our way, we had to step up, help out, or go home. On one occasion, while out on a weekend trip to a beautiful waterfall, I discovered the strength of my courage and the need for it in my life in the wilderness. It was late June, smack dab in the middle of summer, and I didn't have a care in the world. Saturdays meant time to explore and relax, and that's exactly what my friends and I planned to do. We were camping in Lower Relief Valley, and we were so excited to look for the waterfalls. They were simply magnificent, cold but exhilarating. We swam in deep pools and jumped off cliffs into the freezing water. I felt the delicious rush of danger as we screamed and laughed under the waterfall. It was perfect. After playing in the waterfalls for hours, my friends and I decided to go back to camp to make lunch. However, I had left my towel up on the other side of the creek and needed to run back to retrieve it. They started towards camp while I headed toward the rock wall, where my towel was just 20 feet above me on the top of the cliff. The first part of the climb was easy, and I made it about halfway up the rock face when something went wrong. I was on a platform, but was sliding dangerously on the sandy, slanted rock on which I perched. I found myself on a rock face, virtually cliff-hung, and unable to go up or down the wall. I was terrified, and I was alone. We had been warned by our supervisors about the dangers of climbing rock faces, and suddenly, I realized why. I nearly panicked, but as I recalled what they had told us about being in this type of situation, I managed to keep cool. Taking a risk by removing my sandals and slinging them around my wrist, I was able to keep from sliding off the sandy rock and steadied my balance. The ledge that I was attempting to haul myself over was just beyond my reach, and I was afraid that if I made too sudden a move, I would fall several feet into the swirling rapids below. I didn't have room to make a mistake. I took a deep breath and heaved my body up with all the might I could muster. Seconds later, I was sitting on top of the ledge, panting and thanking the universe that I had figured out how to shimmy up that rock. I hardly remembered what I did to make it up, but I didn't care. I laughed, impressed with my abilities, and hurried back to camp. I don't think I ever understood the importance of courage so much until that day, when a force of will and the instinct for survival heaved me up over that ledge. I had faced challenges in the past, but never were they so much a matter of life and death than when I perched precariously on those rocks, deciding to keep going instead of giving up. Ever since that day, courage has taken on a special meaning for me. Courage shows up when you most need it and lifts you up when you just can't seem to find your way. Courage is there for you in the solitude of the wilderness when there is no one but you and that wall that's keeping you from living.
Brendan Sims is a new reporter to Life Now. His venture into the mystery of childbirth and his innocent awe over his wife's ability to give birth with no drugs as well, you'll see.
The evening of May 13th, 2009, I was witness to one of the most courageous acts I've seen in my life. My wife Tara was 8 months pregnant, and we really thought we'd be waiting another couple weeks for our son to arrive. We spent an evening at First Unitarian at a Soul Matters meeting. We bought a changing table off of Craigslist, and then we went to bed. An hour later, however, we were awake, and Tara was, in fact, in labor. We didn't realize it for quite a while, but regardless, she was able to draw on all the preparation and the techniques we'd learned, and she handled the situation with total aplomb. Her courage was in the way she handled that incredible pain and stress, by seemingly setting it all aside and staying focused on what lay ahead. So, Tara, I would say that one of the most courageous things I've seen in the past 10 years is you giving birth to our son. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know if courageous is the right word, because you sort of, you get there and you don't really have a lot of choice about it. You just do it.
Yeah, but there's like, there's forethought. There's, you know what you're... what you're getting into, you know?
Well, it's easy to pretend that you're not going to... it's easy to not have labor and childbirth at the forefront of your mind when you're planning on having a baby.
It seems like, for me, that would be right at the forefront, like, especially as you're getting bigger and bigger and...
well, like by that point, it's too late.
Yeah. But you never seem to be at all, like... I would have been stressed out about it, you know, like going to the dentist or something, you know.
Well, you
like,
have to think about how this is something that women have been doing for more than thousands of years. Women have always been giving birth, obviously.
But is that how you were thinking about it? Like,
I was thinking about...
This was your first time. You haven't been doing this for thousands of years.
I was thinking that this is what your body is made to do. And our survival as a species depends on your body being able to do that.
All right, well, if women have been doing this for thousands of years, okay, but this was our first time, you know?
And true.
We definitely had to make decisions going into it. We weren't just sort of like blissfully ignorant, you know? Like, we decided to sort of wait, you know, not run off to the hospital right at the first sign of labor.
It didn't seem less scary to be at the hospital for the beginning part. It just felt like we were getting through it and it was going fine. I mean, fine. Horrible. But...
What was your mindset as you were... I mean, it was like building and building and... I mean, I feel like I was just completely out of it. Like, looking back, I have those notes where I was keeping track of the time on the contractions. And I was sort of focused on that. To me, there was this really objective thing that I was, like, looking for, you know, and... But you were sort of in this whole other world. Like, and I don't...
Yeah, I wasn't being very objective.
No.
Capable of much objectivity.
But it didn't overwhelm you. And not to... I guess, I mean, I think this is part of what I'm talking about, courage. Because, you know, you get overwhelmed at times when things come up and, you know, messes up a schedule or something. You can get a little overwhelmed. But this, you just sort of... did it.
When I was like actually pushing, I knew that part of things could take 2 hours, but in my head for some reason I thought it would take about 5 minutes, and I just kept thinking that it was about to be over at any time, even though before I went into it I knew how long appropriate
that you could be pushing and
for a long time.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I thought that it was going to happen really, really quick, which...
I mean, it did. It did go pretty smoothly.
It took an hour and a half, I think, that part. So that's within the range of normal. It wasn't the 5 minutes that I thought it would be. But I think that definitely a lot of chemicals in your body come into play and... maybe make you think that, certainly give you a weird sense of reality.
You decided not to use any pain medication.
Well, I had, you know, before I started, I didn't sign anything saying I absolutely would never use any. I just...
Did it cross your mind?
I don't think it really did. But... if I really felt that I couldn't handle it, I'm sure I would have used it.
As you were going through it, was there a motivation thinking about Levi being around? Like, did you have a concept of him through that? Did that help? It took me a few hours at least to really feel emotional towards him.
It didn't quite feel real. I was, you know, my son was being born. It was more about getting through what I had to get through, I think, during the contractions.
I think you could admit that it was courageous, but hearing you describe it, there's also sort of this, you are also part of a process that sort of takes over and happens and...
Is it courageous if you don't have a choice? Literally, everyone's mom has done this.
But I didn't know them.
It's true, you weren't there for
it. So it's special for me. I don't know.
Oh, it was special for me too.
Yeah.
This show was brought to you by the First Unitarian Church of Rochester, New York. If you'd like to find out more about the church, be sure to visit us at rochesterunitarian.org. Life Now Radio, though, is dedicated to the belief that religion should be about living well in this life, rather than worrying about the next. And hey, if you'd like to find out more about this program and to find show notes and other resources, then check us out at the web too, lifenowradio.org. You can also find us on iTunes, and we'd really love it if you'd help us promote the show by giving us a review on iTunes the next time you're there. If you like what you've heard in this show, and are curious, then hey, be sure to visit your local Unitarian Universalist Church. I know it may seem like a scary step, but it's not really, because we likely have what you're looking for. Humanists, theists, pagans, non-believers, teachers, truck drivers, doctors, and activists joining together each week in the rebinding of our spirit and purpose. In fact, you might just find when you come that you feel like you're coming home. And if so, you know what? You deserve it and are probably ready for it. So take a chance. Show up at church some Sunday morning and surprise yourself.